The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome to the Boardroom, hosted by Russell Dinkins. This week's meeting is called to order.
I'm your host, Russell Dinkins, and I'm in studio with Nicole Reeves. And Nicole, how was your holiday weekend?
Not long enough.
Not long enough? Okay, all right. All right, I can understand that. This seems like a Monday-Tuesday hybrid, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So what we're going to talk about today is actually we're talking about insurance and as it relates to employee benefits and some of the deficiencies there. Now, I know that you have had a couple different occupations, Nicole, and in terms of having those jobs, how did you approach your employee benefits? Did you have a great understanding of how they worked, especially when you're talking about things like employee-sponsored life insurance policies and such?
Nope, not even as management. We didn't have a good understanding of how it worked. Not at all.
Right. So typically the broker comes along and he or she presents the overall health insurance plans, and they sort of filter in those ancillary insurances, and employees do not really get a lot of time to look at those policies, mm-hmm. to see how they benefit them. Doesn't meet their needs. There's no needs analysis or anything like that done right at the work site. So you're just sort of like, okay, one-time salary, five-time salary, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Right? Sometimes you don't even, you just take it and you go. What other option do you have?
Right, yeah. Right. And when you actually left your employer at the time and went to another job, did you try to extend those benefits or see if you could carry them with you?
I mean, whatever came with COBRA, if you could afford COBRA, and usually the life insurance, I don't believe is, you know, attached to that.
Okay, all right. Well,
if you're trying to extend any benefits. So.
Well, listen, we're going to take all the guesswork out of it. We have our resident expert, Mr. William Thompson. How are you doing, William? Hello, William. Let's see. It looks like it says John Booth. John?
This is John Booth. I think we might have the wrong connection here. I'm supposed to be speaking with.
Okay, William.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, technical difficulties here at WWDB.
All right.
So we're actually we were talking about. I don't know if you had a chance to listen in, but we were talking about with Nicole, and she was talking about employee benefits and not really having a great comprehension of how those benefits worked when she was actually at the work site. So I wanted to get your take on, specifically when we're talking about employee-sponsored life insurance, what are the deficiencies there and what should employers and also employees should be aware of?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to be here and be able to talk about this pressing matter because when, you know, me as an agent in the field, I always encourage those who have a full-time job or part-time, if they're offering these life insurance benefits, take as much of it as you can, okay, while you're presently working, because it allows you, while you're working, to be able to have something to offer to your children or your loved ones in the event that you are to transition while you're actively working. However, the deficits come with, we're talking about two or three times your actual salary that it can offer you, depending whether it's federal government, local government, or just a generalized full-time employee job. And so me being, again, in the field as a broker, the benefits go much greater because even though we are offering more questions. The gift of being an employee is that the underwriting is a lot more lenient in terms of getting you accepted into the group benefits program. However, the limitations are, again, the face amounts, which are the death benefits amount, as well as, when you retire or you are no longer working there, in order to keep those benefits, depending on the program, it becomes very, very expensive. Right. To keep, because your job is no longer participating in the pay structure to keep that policy. So now you're going into retirement or you're now leaving that job and you can't afford to keep that kind of a policy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're older or even a few years or women, you know, have had babies and may have received gestational diabetes, you're now going to have to be underwritten for a full-term product, and you may not pass underwriting because of it. So what we try to do is marry the two together and talk to our group benefits employees and discuss with them having both at the same time. And sometimes they'll say, well, why would I have both if I already have them through my job? And the point of having both is that, so God forbid that something happens to you, if you go on long-term disability or you short-term disability, some of your ancillary benefits, they will not pay for that. You know, if you pass away, two situations that I've been in is where they were on long-term disability, and because they were and they passed away, they did not pay the death benefit, even though they had a work benefits policy. So it becomes unfortunate. So you have to talk to your HR program and find out actually, you know, what the circumstances, terms, and conditions are, because they are different depending on who you're working for. So again, going back to what I will say, we marry the both of them together. So therefore, you have a permanent product in place for your family. Even if you don't have one, if you're planning for your future to have a family or just your loved ones to be able to help take care of you in the event that you become disabled or you actually transition.
All right. So let's go back a little bit. So you're at your, sure. You're at your work site and you make about, let's say, $50,000 a year. You pay for three times your salary, which is $150,000. Let's say you're about 45 years old or so. And at that time, you may have one kid that's actually graduating from high school, another one that's in college. You have a house, you have a mortgage, you have a car note, you have some outstanding debt through your credit cards and so forth. If you just have that $150,000, that's not going to be sufficient, actually, in terms
of... At all, you're severely uninsured.
Yeah, right.
Severely uninsured.
Right, so you have to wait until you get a raise, of course, in salary in order to raise your life insurance. So what are we getting, like 3% in terms of your raising salary each year or whatever? So your raise is not even... consistent with the inflation. So even though you get 3% raise and inflation is about 7%, you are still behind. So in order to actually mitigate that, you're saying to go get some outside coverage. Now, when you get the outside coverage, what they teach us as far as being insurance agents, and Nicole is also an agent, so she'll awesome. correct me if I'm wrong, is that part of your needs analysis, you're supposed to go through all the things that you have as far as outstanding debt and so forth that I just laid out. Then you're supposed to minus out the amount that you're getting from your employee benefits. Let's say if you have $500,000 worth of debt out there, and you have $150,000 worth of employee benefits, then you should be buying $350,000 from your insurance agent, so they say. But when I talk to my clients, I say, listen, your job is not promised, so you don't know whether that $150,000 is going to go away today or tomorrow. So I would actually look at the entire $500,000 as something that I can actually control rather than the other $150,000 that I don't have any control over. I mean, what are your thoughts about that as far as the strategy, Will?
I think that strategy is awesome because, again, you don't know, especially in these times, whether or not your job, like you said, is promised today or tomorrow. And if you are either single or married and you have a combined income, all your expenses are based on a combined income. And so... now, when you put all this together and, you know, like you said, $150,000 policy, or even if you had $200,000, if you have a child that's in college, a child that's trying to go to college, you've got a $200,000 mortgage, you've got debt outside of your mortgage that could be $200,000-$300,000. Who's going to pay that?
Right, right.
Already where does that you come need from? $1 million, and we haven't even put numbers to it, really.
Not at all. So you're already behind, and well, I can't afford it. So what you really can't afford is not having it.
Right.
That's what you really can't afford. You're looking at and understand, making sure our families understand. And I was saying, if we're able to pay $250 for our cable bill, right, mm-hmm. and
you know, a $400 car note, and we're able to do, you know, 2 and 3 cars and, you know, live the lifestyle. I'm not saying that we should not live the way we want to live, but if you put things in decency and order, you'll understand that your finances are backwards. And not to go tell someone about their finances, but if you're, like you said, doing a needs analysis, you're telling me what you can't afford. What I'm saying is when we go out, what you're spending your money on, you actually can. The problem is you don't want to because you don't see the benefit and you don't, it's not in front of you where it's tangible or you can put your, if I pay, I don't know, $200 here for these shoes, I can wear them immediately. What you're really paying for at $200 a month or $450 a month for an IUL is putting in for your retirement or allowing your children to go to college or being able to invest in yourself and be able to borrow from yourself, but you're not thinking about where that $200 shoe is taking you to the next event, and then you put them back in the shoebox and you never touch them again for the next 6 months.
Right. Yeah, there's no instant gratification.
It's done nothing towards the future.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know what? The other thing is that that's why they have a lot of these living benefits with some of these insurance policies now, so that you can look at your insurance policies not only for your heirs, but also for yourself in terms of some of the things that they had in standalone supplemental benefit policies. And when I mean by voluntary benefit policies, I'm talking about the things that you would get for us like Aflac and things of that nature. They have started putting them inside life insurance policies from some traditional life carriers. You want to talk about that, Will, how they marry those in and how they could be a benefit for the living and not just for the people that you leave behind?
Sure. They're usually called critical, chronic, and terminal illness riders. One of my favorite companies that I like to use, for instance, AmeriCo, gives you up to over 90% of those benefits. And all you have to do out of those three different categories from your doctor is qualify. So we call that disability. You're not able to work. So if you're chronically ill, you can't perform two of your daily living activities, you qualify for the critical illness rider. If you are chronic, meaning you've returned cancer or some sort of really debilitating disease that's happening to your body, that's called the chronic illness rider. If you are terminal, meaning you are deemed that you have 12 months or less to live, you have access to over 90% of your policy. So if you had a $100,000 policy, you have access to over $90,000 to pay your present bills, to help your family stay in the home, to be able to live as normal as possible while you're dealing with your ailment.
What I like
now,
about
terminal.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I said, what I like about those benefits, Will, is that, say, for example, you have a spouse and they have used up all their vacation time and their available time, the FMLA, you have enough time to, you have monies to sort of help the bills while they are actually caring for you. And if you are into holistic or some alternative treatment measures, you can explore those avenues because they are outside of what your health insurance will provide you. So you have more options in terms of managing your own care. And that becomes more and more important as you go along, especially if you're dealing with something chronic or critical, as you suggest. I think that the with most employees or most consumers miss out on is the fact that you sort of have to understand that most people just don't pass away. Most people have a series of things that happen before they pass away. So so you need to, if your health insurance does not want to give you the Easy Glide chair or it takes them 6 months to actually approve it, you could get that today, you know, because you'll be able to have the doctor to write the prescription for you to have that underneath some of the provisions that may be there for your living benefits. So so as far as talking about the workplace and talking about the deficiencies where it comes to life insurance and also what people are not aware of is I don't think that that people really take hold of, and I mentioned the word Aflac a few moments ago, how important those voluntary benefits are to you when you actually are, you know, during your working years. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, Will?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just for instance, you know, Affleck, you know, taking on that company's been out now, what, Russell, at least?
Well, since 1955.
Okay, yeah, they're older than, yeah, right. So older than what I'm even thinking. But really, when they made the kick out to really getting these benefits out to the different corporations and offering them, they're literally paying you to go take care of yourself. So when you say you don't want $10, $15 taken out of your check, but they're going to give you $800 to go to the ER because you stubbed your toe or you put you got an ingrown nail coming out your finger or your toes or anything of that nature, they're literally going to pay you. If you're on maternity leave, they're going to pay you to remain on maternity leave, where as your job may not cover all your expenses, right? Like, I think these voluntary benefits are amazing, and they're costing you next to nothing to have.
Right.
They all have their limitations, and I'm speaking really more so of Affleck. They still have their limitations, but if you take a company like that and you're like, hey, you mean to tell me you're going to pay me to do what I'm supposed to do because the numbers say it costs the hospital and your health insurance way more money to put you back together when it was really bad than it is being preventative and not reacting.
Right. Right. And it helps absorb that deductible. If you have a $500,000 deductible and they're giving you cash, those monies for those claims come out within 24 hours of them receiving
it electronically.
So you're not having to wait weeks and weeks. It's not a whole lot of forms you have to fill out. It's like, hey, I was at the doctor's and here's the bill. And then the money just shoots straight out. And the good thing about those companies is that when it comes down to accidents, I mean, if you have children that are in sports and things of that nature, and trust and believe, I have been one of those children that was in the ER every other weekend with some sort of bruise or some sort of contusion and so forth. But if you have the accident policy, it not only covers yourself, but it also covers your children. And I know Nicole's going like this one. It's like, you know, and also a lot of these supplemental companies, where you have that stubborn spouse that does not want to get life insurance, you can't get him and her to get off the dime to go get it. Some of the voluntary companies allow you to buy life insurance on your spouse without them actually being present. So that's also a great benefit. But when you look at the portfolio, if you take the voluntary life that you may be able to get from Affleck or some similar company like Affleck, there's other ones out there like Mutual Omaha and Colonial mm-hmm. Life, and there's several of them that actually have the same type of benefits. But if you take that and you take the employer-sponsored plan, and then you go ahead and then you marry it to your own individual plan, you know, you're right. You have the bases covered and you haven't spent a ton of money, because those voluntary benefits that we were just talking about, they are portable. They belong to you. What people don't understand is that the insured party on the voluntary platform is you. The insured party on the actual, the owner of the policy that's on the employer side is the employer. It's not you. You are the insured party, but the owner of that contract is that employer.
So,
these are the things that need to be aware of. But what I'm excited about, Will, is that if you have the employees that are, let's say you're 30, 40 years old, maybe 50 years old, and you have that aging parent in the household, tell me about what you could do for the aging parents that should be really, really helpful to those people who are working.
Well, those who are working, I mean, the biggest thing is talking about the next steps as they're going into retirement. And that's what they're looking forward to. So and make sure I understand the question correct, Russell, is that you're asking me what are the seniors that are getting ready to retire looking forward to?
No, I'm actually saying is that if I'm in my working years and I know that mom and dad is like 75 and 80, and I know that if something was to happen, it would fall on my lap. What can I do to help mom and dad while I'm, you know, help myself at the same time?
Sure. I mean, there's three different routes that I would suggest that we go. The first route, first and foremost, is pre-planning. And a lot of times people don't want to plan for their transition, for their death. But at the end of the day, I can promise you that's the last stop, and we're all guaranteed to go there. That's why we have life insurance. That's why we have other benefits put in place. but I'm specifically talking about pre-planning. And that means that you have sat down with someone like myself or Russell, and they are a licensed agent. And then we go over a general price list of a funeral home that they felt that their family has worked with or they want them to work with in the event that they transition. They go over this cost estimate sheet. We send it with a insurance-based carrier. And then we sit with the funeral director. They come up with something called a funeral service agreement. For those who don't know what that is, it's the sheet that is itemizing every detail of what the funeral director will do for the family, and the prices at the bottom right. The person receiving the services will sign, and so will the funeral director, locking this price in for today's time. For instance, if you have someone that goes into a funeral home and they pre-plan their services and it costs $15,000, what'll happen is this price is locked in for today's time. So the funeral home will honor that price if they pass away 20 years from now. So you're not paying for inflation. You beat inflation because there's a contractual agreement. On top of that, what's really cool about it is there are programs now out there that will say, okay, you'll pay it off in 10 years. So you don't pay anything else past 10 years. Okay. Your pre-plan is paid off, but because of the return of premium option in it, you're able to get almost double, sometimes more than double than what you put into it.
Return of premium, explain that.
Right. So let's just say, again, the service costs $15,000. So you break that down with a 1.25% interest rate, and that's calculating growth with inflation. And we all know numerically inflation is beating it. However, the way the insurance company is doing it now, because previous pre-planning was always going to the bank, and then they're giving you a 0.25% interest rate, and it's really dollar for dollar. They're going to, the funeral home's going to say, well, you know, mom or dad's passed away. They only put in $7,000. We need the other $7,000 or $8,000 to get to the $15,000. So where are you going to come up with this? You're going to use your credit card, so forth and so on. That time is no longer the only route. But now have insurance carriers that are backing up saying, if mom passed away in the next year or two, we'll give you the whole $15,000 because the insurance carrier has backed it up. However, if she was to live all the way through her 10-year span, okay, the funeral plan is completely paid up. However, every dime that she paid into it plus the interest is given to the family. So the $15,000 that was already written off for the funeral home, anything above that can be put towards the funeral home, the funeral services, or given back to the family as like a beneficiary check to do whatever it is that you please to do with it. That's not been happening years ago. No one did that. So the insurance company.
So you're saying that the funeral home is not necessarily the beneficiary side. Sometimes in this instance, it will be the family still.
Correct. The funeral home has agreed to do the services at that price because they've signed the FSA, the funeral service agreement. However, if there's any other proceeds, because we are in the state of Pennsylvania, left, it can be given back to, as the beneficiary is listed on the policy, given back to them. So okay. I think it's a beautiful program instead of it being dollar for dollar, mm-hmm. Like it's previously been, where you're like, well, my mom did a pre-plan for $7,500. Yeah, mm-hmm. But she only paid $5,000. We got to come up to $2,500. I don't have $2,500.
Right.
So we can't continue with the services. That's no longer the only option. We now have the option of pre-planning, locking in today's pricing, beating inflation, and having a higher death benefit than what you originally signed up for. And that's a gift to give back to the family.
Are there age limits to those type of plans?
We are pushing about, some of them are going up to age 90. After 90, it's usually a single premium. So it's like if someone had an annuity or they pulled it out of retirement, you would just do a transfer, a 1035 exchange, and transfer the money into, or if the money was just in a bank account, you would just move the money, pay for it. It would have some growth to it. But not like it would in the multi-pay.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely.
The cool, great. It also helps you with the Medicare spend down. the five-year look back. If you move the money into that, it is a it can be locked in like an irrevocable trust. So if you know mom or dad are making too much money and you already foresee in the future that they're going to a nursing home or they're going to need some form of assisted living, you can take that money, put it into, make it a burial account, and it keeps that because it doesn't grow cash value like a traditional whole life. It just has an interest-bearing account where you can't withdraw from it. It allows that five-year look back to be dismissed off of them.
Got it. I tell you what, Will, you're going to have to come back again and talk to us about the Medicare and all the ramifications of Medicare at the work site and after you leave the work site. And I'm sure Nicole's going to have much to chime in from her tax and accounting.
She got that. God bless you. I'm going to have my ears open to listen.
Yeah, so you guys are going to really have the floor. So in the remaining 1 minute, I'm going to ask you to give your contact information, Will, so that whoever's listening can reach out to you.
Sure. My number is 267-399-4075. Again, that's William Thompson, President and CEO of Total Life Care Planning, 267-399-4075.
Thank you for being a part of the Boardroom, Will, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks when you're going to be educating us about Medicare.
Awesome. I can't wait. We got a lot of new plans this year.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
And we will be back next Tuesday at 4 o'clock right here on the Boardroom. Nicole, you have any parting gifts or comments?
No.
Not at all. Okay. Listen, stay cool. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Boardroom meeting has been adjourned. Please join us again next Tuesday at 4 p.m.